One summer when I was a kid, I had a friend, and my friend and I spent this entire summer building ramps. We were building ramps for anything that we could jump off of ramps with. So our rollerblades, skateboards, and bikes. And at the beginning of the summer, we started really small. We just found scrap wood around somebody's house and used whatever we had to put together, just a little jump that we could go off of. But as the summer went along, we got a little bit more confident. We started building up, and the ramps that we were building got a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, and we got more excited about what we could do jumping off them and doing tricks and having fun, stuff like that. So we get to the end of the summer, and we kind of been building up, and we built the biggest ramp that we had built the entire time. It was huge, and we were super excited. And as we talked about it and we finished building it, we said, it's time to get serious. I mean, we're gonna really fly off of this thing. We gotta ramp up our speed and really try and launch. And so I decided I was gonna go first, and that's exactly what I was gonna do. I was gonna get on my bike, so I get on and build up some serious speed and just launch off of this thing bigger than we had jumped the entire summer. And so I get on my bike, and just as I hit top speed, I hit the ramp and I launch off of it, and I start soaring into the air like a majestic bird high above the earth where all the other mortals walk. And I just feeling this freedom. And as soon as I felt this freedom soaring in the air, I began soaring straight over my handlebars. And then I started flipping completely upside down. And very, very quickly, I hit the ground with a thud. I landed right on my back, and I skidded across the hard pavement. And after lying there, sort of in shock for, I don't know, a minute or two, I stumbled to my feet. The wind had been knocked out of me. My entire body hurt just from thudding down. I knew that I was bleeding from my back all over the place. And I can't remember what I said, if anything, to my friend, but I just sort of stumbled up. I collected my bike and I started hobbling home. I get home, and the only person home was my dad. And he looks at me like, what in the world happened to you? And he managed to bring me up to the bathroom, and he gets my shirt off, which at this point, the whole back of my shirt was totally shredded. And I realized at that point that my entire back was just so cut up. And so you remember this stuff we used to use to clean your cuts, hydrogen peroxide. Like if you got a little cut, I don't think doctors recommend that you use this anymore, but we used to take hydrogen peroxide to clean your cut. And so if you had a little cut, you might dab a little bit on a Q-tip and sort of pat it, and it would clean your cut, but it would also really, really sting. So here I am, and I'm totally just shredded on my back. I'm in so much pain, but we know that we have to clean the cuts up. And so I kind of bend over, and my dad looks at it, and instead of kind of taking a Q-tip and patting it down, just because my back was so shredded, he just started pouring that bottle all the way down my back, and it stung so badly that I thought I was going to absolutely scream. And in those moments, I was in so much pain. I think the reason why I still remember it all these years later, and maybe I'll never forget it, is because it was one of those moments in my childhood where I think I was in maybe more physical pain than any other time. It was maybe the time that I got hurt the absolute most in my childhood. I'll never forget it. But what I realized in those moments, and as I look back on it, what I realize is that in a sense, what pain does is makes us selfish. That's part of the role of pain. Pain alerts us to a problem. Pain alerts us to something that we need to fix our attention on. We need to deal with it. We need to remedy it. When it's our pain, in that sense, it kind of makes us selfish. It makes us think about ourselves and what we have to do. Specifically, how do we get rid of this pain? How do we fix this problem that we're having? And I want to welcome you today to Westside Church here online, and we've been talking about that in this series. We've been talking about how we try and escape the pain in our lives, that from little things to big things, we all have certain pain points. It might be the stress of the everyday monotonous routine that we're in. It might be things that have really hurt us deeply emotionally. It might be things that are happening in our family or at work or just generally in our lives. But we've all got these pain points. And a lot of times what we do is we try and self-medicate. We look around and we say, how do I get the pain to stop? And there's healthy ways to address that. We've talked about some of the unhealthy ways that we try and address the pain in our lives just to make it go away. How do I get something to take care of the pain that I'm experiencing now so that I'm not experiencing it anymore? And that looks different for all kinds of people. It could be that we go to things like food or shopping to escape, things that maybe in the short term make us feel better, and we try and use those to help forget our pain. It could be drinking too much or smoking too much. It could be trying to escape into a reality that doesn't exist through pornography, or just binge watching TV hour after hour after hour, or way too many video games because we don't want to face our lives. It could be even things that seem somewhat harmless at the beginning, like working too much. But we start to work because we don't want to face some of the things that are happening at home, maybe. But all of us have these sort of ways that we try and escape. We try and do things that get our mind off the pain. And today, what I want to turn our attention to is the fact that for many of us, the pain that we feel, it isn't just our pain that happens to us on our own, but it's relational. And the fact that our pain oftentimes comes from things that other people have done to us, and we have to admit that we've hurt other people and we've caused them pain, and we don't just experience this kind of stuff on our own in isolation, but oftentimes it's very relational. There are people who have maybe betrayed us or manipulated us or abandoned us or abused us, and we have started to carry around some of that pain because of it. And again, it works both ways. We know that we have often been the person, maybe we didn't even intend to, but we've done that to other people. And the problem is, whether that's happened, again, because of something that's going on in your marriage or at work, somebody that you work with or that you work for, maybe it's friends or family members. Maybe it's people that you interact with somewhere out in life. But whatever the case is, if we don't resolve those issues in a healthy way, they start to manifest themselves in anger, in bitterness, and in judgment. And those are things that so many of us carry around, and things that are really dangerous for our souls and for our relationships. And so today, we are finishing up our series that we've been calling Escape, and we've been working through the book of Jonah in the Old Testament of the Bible. Today, we're going to be in Jonah chapter 4, and we're going to start to see why it is that Jonah, who is the prophet we've been following around, really didn't want to do what God told him to do. So a quick recap of the story. God had told Jonah, a prophet, to go to the people of Nineveh, who would have been Jonah's enemies. The people of Israel and the people of Nineveh, or the Assyrians, were enemies. The Ninevites were known to be a violent people. They were famous for the way that they tortured other people and hurt other people. And Jonah didn't want to go there, and so he turned and he went the opposite direction. He got on a boat. But then there was a big storm and everybody throws him out of the boat, and Jonah looks like he's dead and he's a goner, but God appoints a fish to swallow him up, spit him out. The story restarts and Jonah goes to Nineveh, where he was supposed to go. And last week we saw that the people of Nineveh repented. They turned, and they turned towards God. And now we come to Jonah chapter 4, and we're actually going to find out specifically, explicitly, why Jonah didn't want to go, what his main problem was. And it's going to be really instructive for us in terms of thinking through some of the ways that we try and escape the hurts in our lives and the relational matter and some of this anger and bitterness and judgment that we carry around, how we can deal with it. So Jonah chapter 4, I'll start reading in verse 1. It says, "But it displeased Jonah exceedingly." This word here, the displeasure that Jonah's experienced, if you remember back in the beginning of the book, it said that the trouble of the people of Nineveh came before God. It's the same word here. God was troubled for the people of Nineveh. Well, now Jonah is troubled, and he's exceedingly troubled. He's really, really angry. That's what it says in the rest of the verse. He was angry. "And he prayed to the Lord and said, 'O Lord, is not this what I said when I was in my country? That is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live.'" Jonah has a pity party here. I'm done. This is so bad what's happening here. I would rather die than live. What he said when he reaches out to the Lord, when he cries out to the Lord, tells us, now we get the clarity, why did Jonah not want to go to Nineveh in the first place? And he quotes from Exodus chapter 34, which is a time when Moses, one of the great leaders in Israel's history, he saw God's glory. God passed by him. And as he did, he revealed his character to him. And this is a quote from God's character, that he is gracious God and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in love and steadfast love, and relenting from disaster. And Jonah now says, here's why I never wanted to go. I was afraid that you were merciful. And I was afraid that you were going to be merciful to people I didn't want you to be merciful towards. See, Jonah wants the people of Nineveh to get what they deserve, to get punishment, to get paid back for all the cruelty and all the violence that they had perpetrated against his people. God, we read this and we think, oh, this is great. God is merciful. He's abounding in love and he's gracious. This is so good. This is the way we want God to be. Well, it is the way that we want God to be towards us, but not always towards the people who have hurt us. And that's where Jonah is. The way I feel is I was afraid that you were going to forgive these people. I've heard about that. I've read about that in the Bible. And I actually thought that maybe that would be what happened. You know, this quote, if you go on in Exodus 34, what you actually read is that it also says, but God, he just won't let things go. He's also going to bring punishment. But that is not part of the quote here for Jonah. Jonah's going, I was afraid of this, that you're more loving than you are punishing, angry. I was worried that we would see more of your love and your grace and your forgiveness than the punishment. Because I believe those people need to be punished. And in verse 4, amazing question, the Lord responds to Jonah. The Lord said, do you do well to be angry? How's this going for you? How's it working out for you, Jonah, to be angry? Is it right for you to be angry? Man, it's a tough question. Because when you're dealing with someone who's really hurt you, that is what you feel you ought to be. I deserve to want justice, and I want this to be fixed, and I want them to get what they deserve. I want them to hurt the way that I hurt. That's the way I feel deep within me. God goes, is this doing you well? How's this working out for you, Jonah, to be angry, to carry around this anger? Is it doing you any good? So let me ask you today, because I think a lot of us, we've got this, maybe in a small way or a big way in our life, we're carrying around anger or bitterness or judgment. There's something that other people have done to us and we don't want to let it go. We want them to get what they deserve. We want them to hurt too, if we're really honest and we go deep down. And I want to ask you too, is it doing you any good to be angry or bitter or judgmental? You know, when we wish harm on others, we hang on to harm for ourselves. I think that's just the reality. Yeah, I know, because it feels like we want what it's right for me to want this justice and for them to be paid back. They shouldn't just get off the hook. But when we hang on to harm for others, we're actually hanging on to it for ourselves too. When I'm wishing that upon someone else, it means I'm carrying around things that are poisonous for my soul. That this anger, this bitterness, this judgmental attitude that I have isn't good for me. It's not good for them, but it's also not good for me. And when that stays in our hearts and in our souls, you know, we stop and ask, is this good for you? Is this giving you more peace? Is it giving you more rest? Is it giving you more joy? Is it increasing love in your life? Is this making life better for you and for people around you? Does it do well for you to continue to be anger or bitter or judgmental? Even though that's part of you feels like that's how you should feel and what is right, is it actually good? That's a tough question for us to really ask ourselves and to say, man, I got to come to terms with that. Maybe I need to change the way I'm thinking about other people, thinking about those who have hurt me, thinking of those who continue to hurt me for their sake and also for my own sake. So now we continue to read in verse 5, and we get kind of God gives an illustration, a really tangible picture. It says that Jonah went out of the city and sat to the east of the city and made a booth for himself there. He sat under it in the shade till he should see what would become of the city. So we kind of have this idea that, you know, Jonah, he'd really been hoping that people are going to get punished in Nineveh, not forgiven, and he goes and he finally does what God tells him to do. He preaches a sermon. He comes out of the city on the other side and he sits there. And I almost see this like the Grinch who stole Christmas, right? The Grinch comes in, he steals all the presents and all the decorations of the Who's in Whoville. And he goes up to his mountain and Christmas morning comes and he's kind of looking over it. And he's hoping that he's going to see everybody comes out and they're miserable because Christmas has been stolen. But instead the Who's come out and they're singing and dancing. And, you know, turns out that their joy doesn't come from the presents and the decorations and all the rest of it. They can still be joyful. I feel kind of the same way for Jonah. He goes out and he builds this booth. So picture maybe he takes the brush or sticks that he finds and he's out in the hot desert area and he builds a little place for him where he can get a little bit of shade. And he's sitting there and he's kind of hoping that everybody's going to wake up and they're going to be destroyed. But of course, we know that's not what happens. He's sitting there, and he's waiting to see that happen, but it didn't happen. In verse 6 says, now the Lord God appointed, that's an important word. We've seen that word appointed a couple times. God appointed a fish to swallow up Jonah and spit him out to actually bring him back to the land of the living. Now God appoints a plant, and he made it come up over Jonah that it might be a shade over his head to save him from his discomfort. So Jonah was exceedingly glad. Remember just a minute ago, he was exceedingly mad at all that was happening and that God was forgiving his enemies. Now he's exceedingly glad because of the plant. But when the dawn came up the next day, God appointed a worm that attacked the plant so that it withered. When the sun rose, God appointed a scorching east wind, and the sun beat down on the head of Jonah so that he was faint. And he asked that he might die and said, it is better for me to die than to live. But God said to Jonah, do you do well to be angry for the plant? And he said, yes, I do well to be angry, angry enough to die. Okay, so Jonah's sitting out here in this little hut that he's created for him, and God appoints a plant to grow up, probably a castor oil plant, a big plant, and it gives him shade. Now, for those of us who are here in Hamilton or near Hamilton, we are coming through a couple of months of winter, Canadian winter that we've been enduring. It's been cold, at times dark, a lot of snow recently. And some of us go, man, if I could escape to somewhere right now that was hot and sunny, if I could feel the hot sun on my face, I would love that. That would be a dream. This is a part of the world where the sun is dangerous. It gets so hot, you see that Jonah is faint. Like if you don't have enough water and you don't have enough shade, you can't get out of the sun. This is a life and death matter in this part of the world. And so Jonah's out here and all of a sudden, you know, it's hot, but God appoints this plant and it covers him. It gives him shade. He's cool enough. He's okay. Then God appoints a worm and it withers. And so now his shade is gone and he appoints the scorching east wind. Again, when that happens, this is a time where people got to be really careful because you could totally dehydrate, get sunstroke. You could die from the heat and the sun out there. And so now it's beating on him and he's so upset. He was so glad that he had the mercy of this great plant that was giving him shade. Now it's taken away from him. And of course, he's pity party again. It's better for me to die than to live. But God says, do you well to be angry for the plant? Like, do you have a right to be angry about this plant? And he says, yes, I do well to be angry, angry enough to die. That was my plant. That was my preservation. That's what I needed. And God's basically asked him, should you care so much about this plant? And he's, yes, because this was a mercy that I accepted. I was so grateful for this, and now I'm mad that it's gone. In verse 10, the Lord said, you pity the plant for which you did not labor, nor did you make it grow, which came into being in a night and perished in a night. Jonah, this is a gift for you. You didn't do anything to plant this thing. You didn't water it. You didn't take care of it. It just grew up, and it was good for you, so you were exceedingly glad to receive it. And should not I pity Nineveh? Shouldn't I be compassionate for Nineveh, the great city, in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know their right hand from the left, and also much cattle? Jonah, if you understand the great value of grace to you, why can't you offer it to them? When I'm merciful to you, I give you this plant, you're exceedingly glad. But when I offer the same grace, the same life to your enemies, you're exceedingly mad. Shouldn't I be concerned for these people? People that I love, people that I created. It's a challenge to Jonah's nationalism, right? The us versus them. Jonah's racist. God is for us, the Israelites, but he's against them. He's against the Assyrians or Ninevites. He's on our side and he's against our enemies. That's a very dangerous thing for us. When we have this ideology that God is for me and against other people, we see in the world on small stage and big stage, how people can justify doing just about anything to somebody else because God is for me and he's against them. We could justify wars. We can justify violence. We can justify hurting other people. We can justify exclusion. We can justify just about anything if God's on our side. If we think God's on our side and he's against the people that we're against. And that's a big message here in the book of Jonah. Hey, Jonah, maybe God is actually for not just you, but for them. Maybe he's trying to break down those walls. We see that very clearly in the ministry of Jesus and in the New Testament, that this idea that everything culminates in one people group, it now goes out to the entire world, all nations, all people. God is for everyone. It's this obliteration of an idea that we could put God in our back pocket and be nationalistic or racist or, you know, again, last week we talked about some of the isms, all these isms that tear us apart from other people, people that aren't like us. Jonah's exceedingly glad to receive God's mercy. He's exceedingly mad to extend it. And God's perspective is different. At the end, he says, shouldn't I pity? Shouldn't I have compassion on Nineveh? All these people who don't know their right hand from their left hand. That's a powerful idiom. These people, you think they're just cruel and they're violent, that they're terrible people. You've labeled them that. But right hand from left hand, maybe that means that these are people who are trapped by their troubles and don't know how to escape them. Oh, by the way, just like you, Jonah. Just like you who tried to run away from God. Just like you who are trying to escape your troubles and the things, and you did it wrong. Well, maybe these people, they're actually the same way. You think they're terrible, horrible people. Maybe they're people who have just been so stuck. They're looking for a way for escape. Maybe their violence, their cruelty, they didn't just wake up and say, we're going to be terrible, awful people. Maybe it comes from deep pain in their lives and in their history and in their ancestral lines that now has culminated in this. And when I read that, I can't help but think of Jesus. When he was being crucified on the cross, they nailed him to a cross. And what did he pray as he looked out on the people that were doing that violence to him? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. These are people who feel so trapped. They're so stuck in a certain way of living and in their pain and in a world that is us versus them and dog eat dog and you know, get what you deserve and give other people what they deserve. They don't even know what they're doing. And Jesus' prayer is that they would see a whole different way. That's not retaliation, but his mercy, his grace. God, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. These people, they don't know their left from their right. They can't see a way out from their troubles. They can't find a proper escape. And so just like you were trying to escape in an unhealthy way, so are they. But Jonah, you're exceedingly glad to receive mercy, but you're exceedingly mad to extend mercy. Mercy is for all, or mercy is not mercy at all. What a powerful message in the book of Jonah. If you receive that mercy, you also have to be ready to escape it. That's what happens. And that is, I think, part of this powerful message and powerful message of Jesus is we need to break this cycle of retaliation. Hurting people hurt people. When we're hurt and we don't know how to escape that kind of way of living, we end up one way or another, that kind of piles up and we end up hurting other people. And other people, it's the same thing. We don't realize sometimes, but people don't just wake up and say, oh, I'm going to hurt you today. I'm going to do something really bad. I'm going to blow up our family. I'm going to make life hard for you. I'm going to say terrible things about you. But the reality is that hurting people hurt people. It's people that they don't know their left from the right. They're trying to escape their own struggles and problems. Just like we are. How do we get out of this pain? And unfortunately, so many people, we use retribution. Well, if I'm hurt, other people should hurt. And maybe that's not even a conscious thought. It's just how things get worked out. Douglas Stewart, a Old Testament scholar, does a lot of work in the prophets. And as he concludes his work on Jonah, the book of Jonah, he says in those last verses, we see a pretty sharp cutoff. We don't know how Jonah responds. We kind of have to imagine, does Jonah say, God, you're right. Man, I need to offer mercy to everybody, even if it's really hard. Or does he continue to throw a pity party? Does he stay out in the desert? And Douglas Stewart says, the audience is left with a choice. To copy Jonah's embarrassing and ridiculous hatred of his enemies, or to see the world as God sees it, a world greatly in need of mercy. And that's our question too. Is it doing us any good to continue to be angry? And to want to retaliate, to give other people what they deserve, to carry around anger, bitterness, judgment. Should we imitate Jonah? Because he's miserable, miserable, miserable. By the end of it, even though this mercy's been poured out on these people, he's so miserable, he keeps saying to God, I'd rather die than live this way. I'd rather die than see mercy extended to my enemies. Is that going to do us any good? Or are we ready to change and show mercy? Now, that's all well and good, but we live in the real world. And we might come to the conclusion, yes, if I've received mercy, I need to extend mercy, but we have some objections that'll come up. Well, what does this mean? Because if people are hurting me, am I supposed to continue to let them hurt me? And it's great to say I'll forgive them and show them mercy, but that doesn't mean that they're going to turn around and change their lives. And if they don't, am I supposed to be a doormat? And what happens if I forgive them and they abuse that forgiveness? And what if they just continue in their way of life and all that kind of stuff? And so I want to talk about that for a few minutes because that's reality. That's the world that we live in. And we can't control other people's responses. We forgive someone. We can't control whether they say, thank you for forgiving me. And, oh, I'm sorry too. And let's reconcile. That's the ideal. Reconciliation is the ideal. And that happens sometimes. But sometimes we just can't control the fact that other people continue to do destructive things and hurtful things, toxic things. They continue to maybe hurt us or hurt other people. And how do we get our heads around how we're supposed to respond? There's so many difficulties with that. And I think Jesus, because Jesus picks up on these motifs huge in talking about loving your enemy. And he shows us what it's like to love our enemy. But there's this great instructive teaching from Jesus in Luke chapter 6 that I think helps us so much when we're trying to ask those questions. Well, what do we do if people are still hurting us and still coming against us and there's nothing that we can do? Here's what Jesus says, Luke chapter 6, verse 27. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. And then he goes on and he talks about things like if somebody wants to take from you, well, give to them. Be proactive and be generous. Somebody's judging you, don't judge them back, but instead come back with some humility, stuff like that. But let's take a closer look at this couple of verses that I think is really helpful. So what happens when somebody hates you? Somebody has this, they detest you. They have this negative disposition towards you. When somebody hates you and you know that they're just like staring daggers into you, they're against you. What could you possibly do if somebody detests you like that? Well, Jesus says, do good. Do good to them. Somebody has a negative disposition towards you, turn around and do something good for them. Do something practical. Serve them, love them, be kind to them, care for them in some way. Will they change their disposition towards you? Maybe, maybe not. That might change them, but I almost guarantee it'll change you when you decide to do good to those who have set themselves negatively against you. You say, okay, but what if they go one step further? What happens when somebody curses you? So now they're not just, I detest you, I have a negative approach to you or a negative position towards you, but now they're actively cursing you. Maybe they're calling you names, saying mean things. Maybe they're slandering you, talking bad about you towards other people. Maybe they're yelling and screaming at you. What do you do if people are cursing you? They're speaking evil or bad over you or into you or about you to other people. Well, bless them. Speak good into their lives. Speak good over their lives. When you are talking to other people, go out of your way, if you're somehow talking about them, to put them in the best possible light. Speak good over them. Bless them. Speak good into their lives if they're speaking bad into your life. They're getting a little more active. Well, you could still bless them and care for them. Okay, but what about those who abuse you? So you say, okay, well, that's well and good. So, okay, now I've tried to do good for somebody who has a negative disposition towards me. And I've tried to talk good to and about someone who's talking bad to or about me. But what if somebody is abusing me? They're hurting me. Maybe there's a chance that they're physically abusing you. Maybe it's an emotional abuse or a mental abuse. It's so toxic. And you would go, I've tried everything with this person and it's not safe for me to be in this circumstance. Or, you know, I've tried everything and we're beyond the sit down for coffee and try working this out. They are still trying to hurt me, abuse me, manipulate me. It caused me pain. I've tried everything. What do I do? I have nothing left. And Jesus says, maybe when there's nothing else you can do, you could still pray. You could still come before God and say, I want to pray for this person. I want to pray for good in this person's life. I want to pray that love would overwhelm them. I want to pray that mercy and forgiveness would take over their lives. I pray that good things would come upon them, not bad things. I pray that they would know how loved they are by God. Even when we feel like we're out of all options, we can always pray. And again, it reminds me of Jesus on the cross when people are abusing him. They're literally killing him. You know, he's been the one that all throughout his ministry, he was doing good for people. And he was blessing people even when they hated him and even when they cursed him. And now they were abusing him and killing him. And I can still pray that God would forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know they're left from the right like the Ninevites. These are hurting people that are hurting other people. But God, maybe you would break that cycle in their minds and in their hearts and that they would be able to step into the reality of mercy as well. Even when you think all options have run out, you could still pray for somebody. So we do good and we bless and we pray, even though it's counterintuitive. And I think this is transformative. When we do these things, they'll be transformative in our lives. They'll change our disposition towards other people and our actions. And even if they don't change, because we can't control what other people do, what their response is, it'll change us. And what it means is we're going to start fighting for people instead of fighting against people. That becomes our new way of looking at it. I'm going to start fighting for people, even if they've hurt me, instead of fighting against them, because we want to break that cycle of retaliation and instead offer reconciliation to the best that we can, because mercy is for all, or it isn't mercy at all. So I realized this that day that I went off the ramp and I went over my handlebars and I was in so much pain. I realized that the pain makes us selfish. I realized that afterwards I was in so much pain, I didn't get up and look at my friend and say, hey, can I help you put the ramp away and whatever else we were playing with and the tools and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what happened to him the rest of the day. I didn't ask. I didn't check in. I went home and I didn't get in the door and say, Dad, have you had a stressful day? Hey, is there anything on your mind? Is there anything I could do for you to make life easier for you? How could I help you today and serve you today? I didn't do any of that pain. It just made me selfish. It was all about how do I relieve this pain? How do I figure out my situation? And luckily there were people who were there for me, but this makes me think that, you know, when we look around, it's not as obvious as somebody flipping over their handlebars, but all around us every day, there are people who have flipped over their handlebars in life, hurting people. And we may not have seen it. It may have been ages ago that they were hurt. It may have been recently, but it's rarely obvious in people's lives. We oftentimes don't know what they've been through, where they've been hurt. And we might look around and say, that person seems selfish. They seem destructive. They've hurt me. They're hurting other people. And we just want to make sure that they get punished and they get paid back for what they've done to us. But what's so hard to see is that they've flown off the handlebars too. And maybe in these moments, what they need so desperately is compassion, care, someone to do good for them and bless them, to pray for them, to care for them. And maybe if we understood that more and more, we would realize that it's time for us to stop fighting against people and start fighting for people. Because after all, that's exactly who God is and what God does. Heavenly Father, thank you so much that you've loved us so incredibly, that despite our shortcomings, despite the way that we've hurt you, ourselves, other people, you show us mercy. God, help us to be people who accept that mercy so deeply that we have really no other option but to know that we extend that mercy as well. Help us to do good to people. Help us to bless people. Help us to pray for people. Help us to fight for people who need mercy so much and not against them. And God, as that message just rests deep in our hearts, we pray that it be extended to the world around us and we would see your kingdom coming more and more in our families, in our marriages, in our friendship circles, in our extended families, in our community, and in our world. And we pray in Jesus' name, amen.